Patriot Homes v. Forest River. Mr. Fountain.
Thank you, Your Honors. I represent the appellant, Forest River. In a normal trial of a copyright infringement case, the trying court would determine whether the plaintiff owned a valid copyright and whether the accused party copied the constituent elements of the work that were original. And thereafter, if infringement was found, the court would issue an injunction in that context. Here we have something different. Here we have a preliminary injunction hearing, which is an extraordinary writ, wherein specificity is mandated in the injunction by Rule 65 because these writs are not normally granted. Okay. But here, where you would absolutely need that infringement analysis, no infringement analysis was done. In fact, Magistrate Neckline did not even determine what the elements of originality were. Instead, what we have is the copyright registrations themselves floating like some sort of magical talisman over the parties, and from that alone, the existence of infringement was found, and then the magistrate intentionally recommended an order that simply said, don't violate the law. Now, that's a serious accusation. I understand. Where do I find that in the record? If we look at page 5 of the report and recommendation, the magistrate pays lip service to Feist Publications and says, yes, I'm supposed to determine if copying of the constituent elements of the work existed here. But he doesn't do it. All he talks about for the next page is there a valid registration? Assuming if the registration is valid, therefore infringement's found. And I said the intent of the magistrate was not violate the law. Where do we find that? We find that in document number 139, the transcript of the magistrate's hearing on this issue, where the issue of specificity directly came up, because we didn't think that simply saying don't exploit the copyrights was sufficiently specific to tell us what we had, because we had several generations of products here. We had generation 1, which we'd already evolved away from, and we were on generation 2, and the question was, does generation 2 infringe? The magistrate said specifically, I'll tell you the way I'd phrase that. Don't violate the law. That should not be hard for you to be enjoined, is to not violate the law. Don't violate the copyrights. And you can leave for a later date if you're doing that. I spent the next page and a half trying to explain why we needed to know now, because to say that we weren't infringing B1, C1, and D1 was fine when we're not doing it, but we were on B2 and B3. And when Judge Sharp got this case, the situation became even more complicated. Magistrate Neckline provided us with some context. He had five parts, to his proposed injunction. The first part, don't violate the law, but the second, the third, and the fifth part put it in the context of Generation 1 products. Judge Sharp removed that context. And he did it for a good reason, because there were problems with extending copyright into the patent protection area. But he didn't put back any context, so what are we left with now? What we're left with now is paragraph 1, don't violate the law. And what does that mean for us here? Let's look at Exhibit 1 of the complaint. This is a floor plan. This is a floor plan of a house, a standard manufactured commodity. Now, everyone knows a rectangular shape is not novel, not original. Everyone knows having a bathroom, a bedroom, and a kitchen is not novel. But what else? Had the magistrate done the analysis required under Feist Publications and at least pointed out what the elements of originality were, we might come down to simply the only difference between this and the prior art is that that kitchen center island has a curve to it and there's two sinks in the bathroom instead of one. But we don't have that. We don't know today where we can go. Sure, Generation 1 may have been an exact copy, but Generation 2, the plaintiff admits, is not. It's only similar. Generation 3 is even further removed. Where does the limit of contempt come into play? Plaintiff alleges that we waived this argument. Clearly we did not. We raised it every single step of the way. Now, unfortunately, more evidence has come to light here that makes this even more complicated. A representation was made to Magistrate Neckline at the preliminary injunction hearing that the states maintained the systems manuals, for example, as a trade secret. Well, we later found out that wasn't true. We submitted a request under the Freedom of Information Act to get those manuals from three different states, and we got them. Patriot complained. The state said, you didn't mark them confidential. They don't comply with the state's requirements, so they're not confidential. Now, those systems manuals come back to us. We submit them to Judge Sharp. And again, what are we prohibited from doing? We don't know right now. Clearly, under the Freedom of Information Act, copying those systems manuals is not a violation, or should not be a violation. It's not a trade secret. Along those lines, looking at the plaintiff's argument that digitizing somehow creates this trade secret again? Okay, we've moved the ball from the trade secrets are everything, the essence of the company, worth $16 million, to now it's the digitizing that matters? Wait a second.
Well, don't the digital files have an independent value?
The statute, the Indiana Trade Secret Statute, says the independent value has to come from the secrecy. And the digitized files are useful, certainly. But their value doesn't come from secrecy. It comes from use. You can use AutoCAD drawings to manipulate additional drawings, to create prints and so forth. But the secrecy doesn't determine the value. And in effect, what they're saying is, if I scan the Bible into my computer, it's a trade secret. No. No possibility. The Bible itself, the information, and that's what the Indiana Trade Secret Act protects, information, remains in the public domain. You can easily and readily get that going, for example, to most hotels. But the digitizing, that electronic file may be useful. It may be proprietary. It may be something that's protectable by a different aspect of state law. But it's not something that's protectable here as a trade secret in itself. Maybe they have a claim against an individual who breached his fiduciary duty by taking it. But that's not what the basis for this injunction was. This injunction was against Forest River, the only appellant here today, to not make these products or not somehow infringe. But we don't know what infringement is. Another point to keep in mind when we're talking about misappropriation is you can't take what isn't there. They have said that we took the heart of their company, the essence of their company. But to take and violate the Uniform Trade Secrets Act, it has to qualify as a trade secret. They have argued certain cases where the information was compiled and they've taken quotes out of context to say that if you got it illegally, it doesn't mean it's not a trade secret. Those quotes, for example, the Amoco case, are completely out of context. That case stood for the proposition that we don't look to extreme economic difficulty to determine extreme feasibility as to whether something is readily available. We still have to look to whether it is basically readily available. And in this case, nothing is more readily available than a FOIA request. We sent one in. We got 8,500 pages of supposedly trade secret documents back. They're public. Nothing changes that by basis of our taking it. It's still a public document. Moving on to another aspect of this case that the plaintiff has said we have improperly brought before this court, the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act. Forest River has fought that claim in two particular manners in this case. First, we filed a 12B motion to dismiss. And secondly, as a challenge to the jurisdiction of the district court in the preliminary injunction hearing, after evidence came into play, we have challenged it. Unfortunately, the magistrate did not address that issue in his report. He assumed it would be taken care of by the 12B motion. Unfortunately, in deciding the 12B motion, the judge really didn't stick to the pleadings. He dipped a little bit into the evidence when he said they met the $5,000 requirement. Actually, the evidence only shows they met $3,000 for the loss amount. The remainder was the cost of litigation. But we have, in effect, an omission of addressing that jurisdictional issue in the preliminary injunction context. And there's only two bases for primary federal jurisdiction here. One is under the copyright law, and one is under the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act. We've raised both jurisdictional issues all the way through on the preliminary injunction issue. In our objection to the magistrate's report, we specifically mentioned that Computer Fraud and Abuse Act as a jurisdictional issue. And now we're raising it here, so it's still properly before this court, not as a 12B motion, but as a substantive attack on jurisdiction. Along those lines, yeah, there is some conflicting case law as to what is meant by a loss. We believe the proper approach is that specified by Nexus, because otherwise, the net effect of what you're saying is, if I respond to a computer theft by a lawsuit, that meets the loss requirement. That means there is no requirement. The $5,000 requirement has to be logically connected to the event. As the Nexus case said, the but-for approach. If the loss would not have occurred but for the event, you're in. But if it's something else altogether, you shouldn't be in. A point about the reasonableness of protection that I just touched on briefly a minute ago. Supposedly, these trade secrets were the heart of the company. This was worth $16 million. The quote was, "They stole the essence of EnergyMate by taking its employees and its trade secrets." Well, if that's what we did, I would have expected to see some serious protection for those trade secrets. I wouldn't have expected them to be given to the state freely. I wouldn't have expected parts of them to be given to customers, to dealers, to end users. I would have expected that when your engineering manager was told by a departing employee that he was taking them, something would have happened, but it didn't. They didn't do anything for months until we were up and ready to go. They knew this was coming. They could have sent a letter in advance. They could have said, "Hey, we know you just hired our five key employees. Be careful about taking our trade secrets. We know at least one of them said he was walking out with our computer files." They didn't do that. They sat there silent, waiting to ambush us. And they did. So now we have these trade...
The district court nor the magistrate addressed any of these issues of whether this stuff could be readily obtainable through proper means.
The magistrate did address that briefly in the hearing, and he asked counsel for Patriot whether the states kept this information confidential. And counsel made the representation that the states did do that. And one of the witnesses, to be candid, one of our witnesses, said he thought the states did that too. Turns out they were wrong. We checked on that. And when we got the FOIA request back, we brought it to the attention of the judge as reasonably soon as we could. It was 8,500 pages of documents, and we had to deal with that. But... they did address...
With both sides initially believing that it was protected, I don't know that we find a lot of case law on this, but... and I'm not speaking to the adequacy, Mr. Fontaine, of the... or the specificity of the injunction here. I understand your point on that. Do we have much of a record here on what was done to protect these secrets?
We do have a record on what was done to protect it.
Secrets?
Yeah. And I'm not sure both sides believe that they weren't available. We didn't express an opinion on that.
I must have misunderstood you. I thought you had a witness that also thought that the state kept these.
He was a third-party witness who was brought in for a particular purpose and was questioned on a different topic. He was not an expert on state procedures at all. He just happened to be there on the stand, and he gave his opinion. Was not a member of the company. But there was a great deal of testimony on the measures done to protect it. There was testimony that came out that there were no confidentiality agreements. There were no instructions given to employees on how to treat trade secrets. They did have a statement in their computer use policy that said confidential information should be kept confidential, but that didn't specify what confidential information was. There was testimony out there that they gave many of these blueprints and floor plans to third parties, to dealers, to help them install the houses on different spots in part, in some cases to end users. So there was a lot of testimony on what was actually done. It's a question of what was reasonable under the circumstances. As if this was worth that much money, I would have expected something akin to the protections for the formula of Coca-Cola, if this was the heart of the company. But instead, we have a rather cavalier approach. If there are no further questions, Your Honors, I'll reserve some time for rebuttal here.
All right, thanks. Okay, Mr. Matthews.
May it please the court, this case is about whether or not the court got it right when it determined that faithless employees who took everything to start a competing company should be enjoined.
Were there any confidentiality agreements in place?
There weren't. There
Why not?
I don't know the answer for that. This is a family-owned company, and there was a lot of trust. These have been longtime employees, but again, this is
Isn't that the normal way to protect employees who jump ship and go to some other either startup or existing company and start doing essentially the same thing?
Not a non-competition agreement most certainly would be, and those weren't in place. But under the law, you don't have to have a confidentiality agreement. There is not a set checklist of what's reasonable under the circumstances to protect the trade secrets. And in fact, the cases that we've cited in our brief make clear that password protecting your computer system, limiting access on a need-to-know basis is reasonable. In this case, the testimony was that the engineering department had access to AutoCAD files.
I just understand what the secrets are we're talking about here. It's not like nuclear codes or something. This is a house with got a couple of rooms. You got closets. You got sinks. You got garbage disposals. And what's the big secret?
Sure. Let me give you there. And Magistrate Judge Nectarline at the beginning of the hearing asked trial counsel what the secrets were, and I'll give you those categories because that's the framework of the 3-day hearing and what the people at that hearing knew were at issue. The first trade secret was AutoCAD files. They only exist in one place, and that's on Patriot's computer system. At least that was until they were copied. That's one category.
Those were not distributed to customers or anybody?
No, Your Honor, they were not. They were kept under lock and key in the computer system, if you will, password protected. When they say a print was given to a customer, this is Exhibit 54. It's one of the system's manuals, and it's a compilation of a lot of data, engineering data, instructions on how to build the home, so on and so forth. And it's a compilation of these and other similar manuals, which we contend are trade secret.
Well, what is the secret, though? What is it?
What is the secret?
If I want to go out and start building modular homes, how do I have to watch out so I'm not violating your alleged trade secret?
Well, the trade secret is they took everything. This is the Bible, if you will, of how to build modular homes, and it talks from building this home from the ground up. It's their years of effort, of trial and error, of perfecting it. This is their playbook, and it's no different than a Coke recipe, and that can be secret. And it doesn't exist. This is a compilation of evidence. It doesn't exist anywhere else other than a Patriot.
See, for me, that's one of the problems. You're holding up this thing which looks like the Chicago telephone book, and you're saying this is the trade secrets here. So what are they?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, it would be the information. It would be the blueprints for the home. It would be engineering calculations. It would be load calculations. I'm talking specifically, Your Honor, with respect to the systems manual and what in the systems manual is a trade secret. It is the step-by-step process for building the home.
And was that information then sent to the state, and then that was disclosed? Because now that's all public, and that's in the public domain,
Let me address that. That was, every state regulates the modular home industry, and every state requires you to submit your process for building the home to the state so they can approve it, make sure it meets building codes.
And there was no request to keep that information confidential.
No, but there was the testimony, even by, I want to point something out. Mr. Fountain said there was testimony that a third party believed they were confidential. Actually, Bill Milliken, Patriot's former engineer who went to Sterling, testified in his deposition, did you try to obtain these quality control manuals from any source? He went to the state. You know what he got in return? Was in a packet, an instruction. Here's what you need to compile. This is the information you need to put together to submit a manual. He was asked, did they give you Patriots? No. And he was asked, did the state give you any other company's actual quality control manual to use as a reference? No, they didn't. Question, are you aware of any public source from where you could get a copy of Patriots quality control manual? No, I'm not. That is on page 152 to 154 of his deposition.
Mr. Matthews, if I could just follow up on the inquiry of my colleagues. If in Indiana there are 10 manufacturers, suppliers of modular homes, I suspect they all have a playbook, for your purposes, trade secrets. And they submitted them all to state authorities to get approval. Are you suggesting there's a significant difference between any of those 10 as to... I don't mean slight design change, but they carry a uniqueness that would be significant.
Well, and you know, what's in the record on that is no one's ever seen a competitor's, and it's unusual to see a competitor's, and until this lawsuit, no one even.
Well, was anyone called at this hearing from a state agency to kind of reflect upon what I just asked you? In other words, what's different from Acme versus Smith Modular versus Jones Modular?
No, and because this issue arose well after the hearing. This happened, the hearing was conducted in October of 2005 over several days, and the report and recommendation was issued in December 2005. This FOIA request occurred sometime in the spring, early summer of 2006, and actually was submitted almost simultaneously with the time the order came out, the preliminary injunction order. So this wasn't an issue. But I do want to say all the state statutes say trade secrets are protected, and they're not disclosed. So the fact that the state's made a disclosure I don't think is determinative that this is in the public domain. We think it's an inadvertent disclosure. The cat's out of the bag. They never told them why they were getting this. For all the states knew, they were giving it to the person for another reason. And there's a case out there on point, Taco Cabana. It's a Fifth Circuit case. It is the only case cited that addresses this issue. And it's very similar because in that case it was a trademark infringement action between two restaurants where one competitor copied another's design, and they couldn't get the blueprints. They needed the blueprints to build it, and they did it by some unlawful means to get them. And a paralegal for the defendant law firm, after the fact, submitted a FOIA request, and the court said that's of no import. You didn't get it the right way, and that's not going to strip the trade secret status. Here, I think
what is the trade secret? It's kind of an offshoot of Judge Flom's questions about you look at these houses, and what's the difference between a house made by Acme and Patriot and some other company?
Let me tell you, I didn't finish the list of trade secrets. We had the AutoCAD files, the systems manuals. We have sales information. That was one category. We had pricing information, which is in a bills of material. And, in fact, Mr. Collett, who is the president of Sterling, admitted he himself considered that information to be confidential. So those are the categories. And there's really not a dispute that, you know, pricing information, sales information should be a trade secret at all. That type of stuff is typically found. The cases are settled on that. The issue in this case is twofold. Do AutoCAD files, because of their functionality, is that a separate trade secret? The AutoCAD files are not found in what was submitted to the state. What was submitted to the state is a hard copy that may include portions or printouts of the AutoCAD file. So the trade secret here, at a minimum, are AutoCAD files and the others. The issue becomes whether or not spending the significant time it takes to get a state manual compiled in compliance with state regulations, having all of the engineering specifications and the other information required, if that information is of value. And let me tell you why, Your Honor, to address your question, why this is a trade secret. You can't ship a home or build homes in the states if you don't have approved systems manuals. And the systems manual tells it generally how we're going to build a ranch home. You have to have that. And more specifically, for a particular model number, you have to have a systems manual or a state approval for the particular model. And until that's proved, you can't ship that particular home. It takes time to design this. They hired a third-party expert to go back and do it after the fact, after they misappropriated Patriots. It takes months to submit those to the state, for the state to get it back, to approve it and allow you to do business. So the value in this information is they had approved manuals that they knew would be approved by the state. They got them approved in a matter of days by simply erasing Patriots.
It's a head start situation? As opposed to buying a single modular home, Mr. Matthews, and taking it apart, would you find the secrets that way?
You could. They could reverse engineer this. There's no doubt. And there's nothing wrong with reverse engineering, right, starting from scratch. But it's the fast start. And the Amoco case is interesting because, you know, that was where they were looking for oil wells and going to look for leases on land. And a lot of that information came from the government. And so you could say, we gave this is freely available on the Internet, and it may or may not be, but it's all that information compiled together that, in that case, gave the person who misappropriated the trade secret the opportunity to go get the leases, and in our case, gave Sterling the opportunity to get up and running.
This injunction order signed by Judge Sharp says, the defendants are enjoined from using, copying, disclosing, converting, appropriating, retaining, selling, transferring, or otherwise exploiting Patriots' copyrights, confidential information, trade secrets, or computer files. How does somebody know, the defendants here, know if when they're doing something, they are in violation of that and apt to get hauled into court and charged with contempt of that court order?
Okay. This is not an obey the law injunction. And I will tell you why it's not. If you look at this, it talks about the type of actions that are prohibited. Using, copying, disclosing, I think that's understood. The question is, what information's covered?
What is the trade? Right. One aspect of that, which I just read, is the trade secrets. How do we know, looking at that, whether they are in contempt of court for violating a Patriot trade secret?
Okay. Well, I think specifically with the trade secrets, you have to understand what was at the hearing and in the context of the hearing, because the trade secrets were discussed and everyone understood and knew that Patriot contended that those five categories of information I gave you were its trade secrets.
So then if someone wanted to make sure they didn't violate the court's order, they would have to get the transcript of that hearing and then go over it so they could then interpret
the language. Well, it depends because here computer files are specific. Virtually, except for one document that had a printout of sales information, everything they took, including the AutoCAD files, the systems manuals, the bill of materials, they were all on the computer. They downloaded this information. So all of that information, is whether it's a trade secret or not, or just plain old confidential information, it all came from Patriot's computer. So that's specific. And they know, and the defendants know, if it came from the computer, then we can't use it. In fact, look at point two of the order. It says you must certify to the court that you've the copy data materials, Patriot's property, confidential information, trade secrets on computer files and removable media have been deleted or rendered unusable. They made that certification, so they obviously could understand what was at issue because they made that certification to the district court in, I believe, July of 06. And
but, of course, paragraph 1 doesn't make it talks about exploitation of rights, confidential information, trade secrets, or computer files. It doesn't specifically say just the computer files.
No, it certainly doesn't. And I guess my point to that is it is specific enough, regardless of whether the judge should have been more specific and added a sentence that said the AutoCAD file systems manuals and pricing and cost information are trade secrets. You know, that is I think that is the appropriate relief here. The judge has clearly found this information to be trade secrets.
Well, wouldn't it make it clear for everyone if we remanded this with instructions that the district court make the injunction order more specific?
I cannot dispute that if to identify the trade secrets. With respect to the confidential file information, because anything in this case, I think the judge was faced with this is Exhibit M. This is the expert report on the computer files. There's 800 files here. And so we certainly wouldn't want the district court to identify 800 files and say, this file is a trade secret, this is not. And I think that was a problem the judge was faced with.
Well, yeah, there's a danger when in there that he would miss something in that. And then this obviously can't list everything, but this one is so broad.
I understand. I think that was the other point. That's an excellent point you make, Your Honor. You know, you draft an injunction so specific, you give the defendant an opportunity for loopholes. The evidence in this case was we made identical copies, and I'm getting on the copyright thing, but we were making the same house and selling it for less money. Their second generation was we're making the same house, but it's an inch bigger, an inch wider. Same identical house. You wouldn't know the difference. In fact, the testimony we believe at the trial would be you could put it on the same foundation. They're looking for a recipe to avoid and evade the order.
Is this
court supposed to say 3 inches is not infringement if you make it 3 inches bigger?
So what generation are we on in terms of their houses? I know the second generation. Is there a third generation?
There are more, and actually, as with respect to these models, a lot of these models are you know, they have a shelf life, if you will. So we're moving down the road. This hearing was a year and a half ago.
Yeah, and is the primary difference on each of those new generations additional inches
your
point of view?
The second generation was the additional inch. What they've done now is they've done what they should have done, designed their own home. Obviously, homes are going to have bathrooms and bedrooms and kitchens, and they're going to look similar. But they did what they should have done, and now they're starting to design their own homes. And that's what we want them to continue to do, because we don't want them to get a very specific injunction. They changed the width of the home by a half a foot, but it's the same home. And those are our best-selling models, and they go back and sell them, and it's still a knockoff. And so I think that was what the district court was struggling with in trying to make this order specific enough, yet not give them the recipe for evading the injunction order.
Well, everything you said here seems to tell me why you wouldn't have been better off with a non-compete clause here telling them that you're an employee of Patriot, so if you were to leave for a period of time, you can't get into the modular home business in a certain geographic area, and that would have been a better way to protect yourself.
That would have certainly avoided this situation, although people do violate non-competes all the time and still start businesses and get sued.
It's a little easier to figure out if they're violating a non-compete than getting into the massive trade secret claims that you're alleging.
It does, but in this case, you know, the district court heard 6 live witnesses, and there's 14 depositions and hundreds of exhibits, and the evidence was overwhelming. And in fact, Sterling, you know, concedes that these people took something, and they took Patriot stuff.
Well, they took the Fifth Amendment, didn't they?
Absolutely. And so certainly there's wrongdoing. And again, that's what the judge saw. Here's a group of people who have harmed this business. It's not a big company. Forest River's huge by virtue of Patriot. Here's a family-owned business with a reputable community leader who started this.
Patriot is the industry leader.
We are an industry, but Forest River Housing
little
is
mama papa industry leader.
It is, but Forest River Housing's in the recreational vehicle arena, and it's a huge company. And again, I think the judge saw that this was a situation that should not have happened, that there was bad acts, there was criminal acts possibly, and he's trying to fashion a remedy that protects Patriot.
Well, at this point, if we're a generation or two down the line, Ms. Matthews, apart from the specificity or lack thereof within the body of the injunction, what harm is out there now?
Well, I think, again, they took some of the information they took was a model mix-match type sheet, which would show your best sellers and your most profitable. And that's what they started building. They didn't build the dogs. They built the good homes.
Well, but that marketing information, wouldn't that have been public in the industry?
No, not like that. Not Patriot's profit margin, not their volume. They don't disclose their volume and how many homes they've sold. And so the harm is, if the injunction is not out there, they'll go back and build these same homes and continue to trade off Patriots, the homes that Patriots designed. So we think an injunction still needs to remain.
Well, isn't a modular home, wouldn't those be public records every time a home is located in an area and what type of home it is? I mean, I'm just asking. I don't know.
I don't know the answer to that question. I'm not sure that it would be, but I don't know the answer to that question. Thank you. I see my time's up.
Thank you, Mr. Matthews. Mr. Fountain.
Judge Evans, I'd like to respond briefly to one of your comments to my colleague. Why no non-competes? Well, I can't speak for Mr. Widener, Sr., the owner of Patriot, but I can tell you that both of the two engineers that he sued for leaving his company and coming to us, he hired from Redmond Industries, who also made manufactured homes. So if you start putting non-competes in the industry, Patriot may lose its own employee base. Secondly, what harm is out there now, you asked? And the response was, well, they know our best sellers. Sure. Their sales manager came to work for us. He, of course, knows the best sellers in his head. He's been selling them for years. He's the guy in charge of sales. We can't strip part of his brain away.
What was the value to you in getting their plans from the public bodies?
Value to us?
Yes.
In terms of the litigation, it was to prove that a representation was made that was not true. In terms of litigation, it was to prove what is a trade secret. One of the questions that was asked here is...
You got that because of the litigation?
We ended up getting that because of litigation, yes. That was not done during the normal course of the business.
These employees came with the clothes on their backs, the knowledge in their head, but no paper.
At least one of the employees came with something. One of the engineers
AutoCAD,
apparently.
Computer. They had the whole computer system.
He apparently had the computer system drawings.
And all the files on it.
That he had created, yes.
Right.
But keep in mind, Forest River Housing was in existence before this. And some of our designs came from some of Sterling's designs came from the Hart Housing Division of Forest River.
Yeah, but you didn't file any cross claim against them for that.
Well, actually, Patriot 2, second lawsuit, is Hart Housing versus Patriot, yes.
Oh.
Second lawsuit. And that's for copyright infringement of the claims that supposedly our sister corporation stole from them, they stole from us. But that's another issue. The question was, what is a trade secret? And the response was, even today, my counsel believes, my co-counsel here believes that the systems manuals themselves, fellow counsel, you're right.
At least I haven't got that impression this morning.
Quite right.
Opposing
counsel, my colleague, put it that way, believes that the systems manuals are trade secrets. But they are clearly not. They are in the public domain, whether any of us like that or not. He said everyone knew what Patriot contended. Yes, everyone knows what Forest River contends too. And it's not the same thing. We are in substantial disagreement as to what constitutes a trade secret. If the order had said, don't use the computer files, that wouldn't be a problem. We stripped them out. We know what the computer files are. The question is, what are the trade secrets that we can't use? What is it out there that we are prohibited in Generation 3?
So your position is that before the preliminary injunction issued, Patriot should have submitted with specificity what part of that document that Mr. Matthews was holding up contains what you should not copy?
That was highly debated, yes.
Highly
debated. They said, and even today, everything in that manual is a secret, but clearly it is not. Some parts of that manual are the brochures of their suppliers. Some parts of that manual are in what they call the billing packs. Some parts of that manual are handed out to customers.
So how would we know what a trade secret is from that, unless it's identified? So
we don't know.
Speaking of Judge Williams' suggestion of a remand.
I agree. It should be remanded. We should have specificity. We need to know what we can't do because contempt is serious. Are there any further questions?
Apparently not. Thank you. Thank you to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement.